Cottonwoods, New Hampshire, delegates from 44 allied and associate countries arrived for the opening of the United Nations Monetary and Financial Conference. These meetings are designed to promote trade in the post-war world and to create a foundation for lasting peace.
The historic meeting at Bretton Woods in 1944 led to the creation of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. The famous British economist John Maynard Keynes played a starring role at Bretton Woods and has ever since been seen as the chief architect of the IMF. But there's more to this story.
If Keynes had not been the head of the British delegation, if it had been anybody else, the whole story that would have been told by historians ever since then would have been an American story, and in particular, a Harry White story. I'm James Boughton. I'm the former historian of the International Monetary Fund, and I'm a senior fellow at the Center for International Governance Innovation, based in Canada.
Boughton spent years researching the American economist Harry Dexter White and recently wrote a book about him that documents how Harry White actually played a central role, along with Keynes, in creating the IMF.
It was the partnership between White and Keynes that was really critical to bringing it forth as a global institution. They both believed very strongly that if you could have a strong global economy, you would also have global peace.
Journalist Rhoda Metcalf spoke with James Boughton about the little-known story of a man who helped change the world economy.
So for so many years, we thought of Keynes as the creator of the IMF. But what you're saying is it never would have happened without Harry White.
Well, that's certainly a fact. And it's difficult to get across because we all adore John Maynard Keynes. I mean, he was probably the greatest economist of the 20th century. Plus, yeah. he was such an amazing cultural figure. You know, he was part of the Bloomsbury literary and artistic group. And then he was this great political figure who dealt with the highest political economic issues of his time. So, and he was married to a Russian ballerina, and, you know, everywhere he went, you know, I mean, he was the star.
Yeah, he was a superstar.
Yeah. And White was a very unassuming federal bureaucrat in the United States. He slaved away in the U.S. Treasury, and until the anti-communists brought out his name, he was almost unheard of.
Right.
But the truth is that White had a design for the IMF as early as 1942, 2 years before Bretton Woods. And at the same time that Keynes was trying to develop a plan, White was developing a plan. And they negotiated over this for a little over a year. And then finally, and Keynes was very open about it, he said, "I give up." I said, "White has this plan. I don't like his plan very much, but that's the plan that's going to prevail. And so let's go along with that." The way he put it was, "Let's dress ourselves in the Americans' clothing and let's go with it." Because it was extremely important to Keynes to have the International Monetary Fund and to have the World Bank created, because that was crucial to the rebuilding the British economy after the war.
And weren't you brought in to investigate Harry White's story because there were these lingering doubts that maybe Harry White was actually a communist spy? Wasn't that the story?
Well, I was. And it was Stanley Fisher, who was then the first deputy managing director, the number two official at the fund, who asked me to look into the whole story of Harry Dexter White, because he had heard various versions of this story. And the Eisenhower administration tried to use Harry Dexter White as a foil to discredit the former Truman administration, Eisenhower's predecessor.
Because the Truman administration had originally brought Harry White in.
That's right. So Truman had appointed White as the U.S. executive director at the IMF. And so the Eisenhower administration came out and said, but they knew he was a communist. Well, he wasn't a communist, but there was a lot of belief at that time that White was some kind of evil character. So that's how I got involved in this whole Harry White story in the first place. So I think it was one of the achievements of my career was to help resuscitate a bit the career and the reputation of Harry Dexter White.
That's great. Harry White was a pretty unlikely character to end up in this role. I mean, he came from very humble beginnings. He didn't even become an economist until a little later into his career. Can you give us a sense of, you know, who was Harry White?
Well, he was the classic late bloomer. There's no right. question about that. But it was circumstances. He had kind of a hardscrabble beginning. He mm-hmm. was the seventh and last child of Jewish immigrants from Lithuania. Hmm. And his parents then died. By the time he was 16, he was orphaned. And he had to go to work in the family stores. So he didn't have much of an early education.
So his family had some kind of business.
They had hardware stores. And he and his brothers basically ran those stores after his parents died. But then he enlisted. He became an officer for the U.S. Army in World War I. He served in France during the war. And so it was only after World War I, by the time he was already in his very late 20s, that he even started going to university.
Wow.
But he did well. He went to Columbia, and then he went to Stanford. He graduated from Stanford. He was 40 years old when he finally got a PhD
wow.
from Harvard. But that was also right at the beginning of the Great Depression in 1932. So it was the worst possible time. Tried to get a job
yeah.
in 1932. So he ended up going off for a couple of years to a little college off in Wisconsin, where he taught for a couple of years. But he wasn't real happy being out in the middle of the Midwest. So then it turned out, because of his work at Harvard, he had a reputation among other economists. And so it was the early years of the Franklin Roosevelt administration. The international financial system was in chaos. The gold standard had collapsed.
Right.
The dollar had been devalued. And so they said, well, let's bring in Harry White. We'll invite him to come in from Wisconsin to Washington and have him analyze this. So he was then invited to join the U.S. Treasury as a summer intern, and he threw himself into it. In the course of 3 months, he wrote a 400-page essay on the future of the U.S. monetary system and, by extension, the international monetary system. What he said made a lot of sense. It was practical. It was visionary. So they said, you know, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah.
And so they hired him for a permanent position. And over the next 6-7 years, he rose from being a summer intern to being the chief economist for the U.S. Treasury.
That's amazing. And an absolutely meteoric rise.
Yeah. And he was recognized by the Treasury Secretary, Henry Morgenthau, as really a brilliant monetary economist and somebody he could rely on. And Henry Morgenthau was not an economist and uh-huh. didn't really understand economics all that well. But he knew that any economic question that came up, he could bring Harry White into his office and Harry White would give him a good, solid answer.
Right. Interesting.
So then, at the end of 1941, we had the attacks at Pearl Harbor, and the U.S. entered World War II.
Right.
So at that point, Morgenthau needed a plan. You know, he needed to figure out what the economic issues were going to be during the war. He said to Harry White, he called him into his office, and he said, Harry, I need you, first of all, to be in charge of all international economic issues. And Harry said, okay, I can do that.
Right.
And he said, and easy. Secondly, in your spare time, I want you to write a plan for how, once we win this war, how we're going to organize international finance going forward so that we can preserve the peace and restore economic prosperity.
And stability.
And stability around the world. And White said, okay, I can do that too. And so that's what got it started. And then all through 1942, 43, and into 1944, that's what Harry White was doing. Back-breaking work and
yeah.
brain-breaking work, you know?
Yeah.
But But that was his job.
So Harry White and Keynes hash out the structure of this future monetary fund. And then at the end of the war, there's the Bretton Woods Conference. So what was Harry White's role at Bretton Woods?
They organized the Secretariat at Bretton Woods into three parts. Part one was to deal with the World Bank, and Keynes was in charge of that. Mm-hmm. And that was a very important job because the bank was in charge of helping countries recover quickly after the war.
Right.
The second part was to create the IMF, and White put himself in charge of that.
I see.
And then there was a third part to deal with trying to create a World Trade Organization. But that turned out to be too difficult, and it wasn't until decades later that the WTO finally got created. But White was in charge of the negotiations for the IMF. But the other role that he played at Bretton Woods was very important, which was every afternoon after the main formal meetings had ended, White would meet with the very large press corps that had gathered, and he would explain to the gathered reporters. He'd have a blackboard or whiteboard, one or the other, and he would draw diagrams, and the press came to love him because he was very, very articulate and clear in his ability to explain the very complicated issues that they were dealing with. And so he was really the contact between the press corps and the conference that was going on. He also organized games. He was a great lover of organized games. He organized softball games and volleyball games, and he even got Keynes to come and watch a softball game that between the Americans and the Russians. And,
that's great.
You know, and it was, so, you know, I mean, in a conference like that, you have over 700 delegates there, and they're all working their butts off, and you have to have some way to relax.
That's interesting. I mean, the games part, because that makes me think about how, I mean, I know Harry White, before he even became an economist, he worked with orphans, right? Children. So I guess games must have come very naturally to him.
Yes. I mean, White, his whole personality was really very complex. And having been an orphan himself, once he got settled in life, at one point, he really intended to make his career running orphanages. But he loved children. He and his wife Anne took in three or four orphans in their own family, in addition to their two biological daughters. So, yes, he was very much into children and games and family life.
Interesting. So, I mean, going back for a minute to Keynes and Harry White's early rivalry for the design of the IMF, was there a big difference between Keynes's plan and Harry White's?
Well, they were very similar, but the structures were very different because Keynes quite naturally developed his plan along the lines of the British financial system.
Right.
And White based his more on the American system. So White's plan was to have countries pool their international reserves, deposit them with his creation, the IMF, and then the IMF would lend out those resources. Whereas in Keynes' conception, there was no pool of resources. He was going to create a new international currency, pretty much out of thin air. And then, like the British overdraft system in their banks, the IMF would just create loans using that new international asset Keynes called bankor. So they argued about that for over a year. But in the end, it was clear the dollar was going to be at the center of the system, regardless of whether it was the White plan or the Keynes plan. So White's plan really prevailed because it was the only practical way forward. Otherwise, if the U.S. Congress said, that's too complicated, too foreign, then they were not going to do it, then there would be no IMF, and that wouldn't have worked.
Right. What did Keynes think of Harry White? Do we know?
You know, there's an interesting contrast in personality. You cannot imagine two people who were more chalk and cheese than White and Keynes. Keynes, tall, aristocratic British, came from wealth and prosperity. He was, by the time of Bretton Woods, he was Lord Keynes,
wow.
Baron Keynes.
Right.
And White, you know, came from nothing, you know, poorer parts of Boston. And there's this wonderful letter that Keynes wrote to a friend in 1943 when he said, you know, this guy is so difficult to deal with. He is so abrasive, so he has no idea of social manners, and he goes on and on like that. And they said, but you know, in the ways that count, he's the best man here. He knows how to get things done. And so Keynes started off disliking him, then respected him, and ended up liking him very much. I mean, really? by that last year of Keynes's life after the war, they were really buddy-buddy. I mean, they wrote letters, Dear Harry, Dear Maynard, and really had a liking for each other.
Mm. So after playing this incredible role in creating particularly the IMF, Harry White's life had a pretty sad end, didn't it?
It had a very sad end. You know, during World War II, anti-communism in the U.S. became rampant because we had the Soviet Union as a key ally, but a lot of people were uncomfortable with that.
Right.
But in the 1930s, a lot of particularly left-leaning people in the United States had experimented with connections to the Communist Party because the capitalist system in the United States had collapsed in the early 1930s, and it was not clear at all how it was going to recover. My own father, who was a young banker in the 1930s and a lifelong Republican, told me once, he said, if you weren't sympathetic to communism in 1932, you weren't thinking, because because the U.S. systems was not working. So you had all these people who had experimented with it and who had maybe been sympathetic in some ways, but now were really trying just to be good, solid Americans and support the war effort during World War II, were under suspicion for a lot of reasons. And so White was certainly aware. Friends of his, colleagues of his came under suspicion, some of them simply because they'd been labor organizers in the 1930s. But in August of 1948, the notorious Congressional Committee, the House Un-American Activities Committee, known as HUAC, was holding hearings on communism in the U.S. government. And a former communist, American communist spy who had never met White, and White had never met her, accused White of being a communist spy because she had heard his name mentioned in meetings she'd been in. And this was the first time that White had had any idea that he himself was under suspicion of being even sympathetic to the Soviet Union, much less of being disloyal to the U.S. and spying for them. And so he immediately demanded to have the right to testify himself. And he did so in the middle of August, 1948. He was just 55 years old. But by that point in his life, he had already had two heart attacks. Mm. It's not surprising because he had worked so hard in all those years at the Treasury. And when he was at the IMF as the U.S. executive director, he had had his first heart attack, and that had led him to retire after just 1 year because he needed to have a quieter life. Mm-hmm. A few months after he retired from the IMF, he had a second heart attack. So he was really in quite poor health.
Right.
And he, under great pressure, you know, in this big public congressional hearing room, press all over the place, he testified for hours, was attacked by the Republican congressman, and it was too much for him. By all accounts, he gave a brilliant testimony defending himself and convinced the public that he was not guilty of these charges. But he then went back to, he had a country home in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And when he got there, his wife said he looked terrible. His face was almost green. And 3 days after his testimony, he had a third heart attack, and it was too much, and he died tragically early. So, yes, it was very sad. And so then 5 years after his death, when his name was again dragged out to discredit former President Truman, his reputation was already shaky, and so it was easy for people to pile on and really discredit him all over again at a time when obviously he had no way to come back from that, from the dead and defend himself.
It's so interesting. Just one thought. You know, here we are 80 years later after the creation of the IMF. And Harry White was a man with very deep concerns about orphans and poverty and inequality. What do you think he would think about the work the IMF does today?
The short answer, of course, is that nobody knows how to do, because the world is so different,
sure.
You know? I mean, if you think about when all these mostly men gathered at Bretton Woods, their entire adult lives had been spent going through World War I and the Depression. I mean, that's the world they knew. And so the idea that 80 years later, we'd be in a world of prosperity, we still have wars going on around the world, and we still have inequality in the world, in fact, rising inequality in the world. But there is a much more widely shared prosperity than there had ever been before. Yeah. All they were really trying to do at Bretton Woods was restore stability so that we would not have world wars and we would not have world depressions.
Mm-hmm. Right?
If they could somehow come back and talk to us,
right.
I think White would be very pleased at the central role that the IMF has played throughout those 80 years and continues to play in trying to bring stability and growth to the world. The critical question would be how he would react to the criticism that the IMF has too often promoted austerity as the means for countries to get their houses, economic houses, in order,
yeah.
And not enough to try to promote economic growth in those countries. And I think the IMF itself has been taking that criticism to heart in recent years. But given White's background, I think he would have at least been looking for more ways, more innovative ways, to try to promote the expansion of growth, particularly to poor countries around the world.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be satisfied with the world as we know it now. He would be constantly, I'm sure, looking for ways to improve it.
Well, James Boughton, what a fascinating story. I thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and telling us about the amazing life of Harry White.
Well, it's been a great pleasure. There's nothing I enjoy more.
With Rhoda Metcalf speaking with IMF historian James Boughton about his article, The Messy Legacy of Harry Dexter White, published in the June issue of Finance and Development magazine. Check it out at imf.org/FND. And look for more IMF podcasts wherever you listen. You can also follow us on X, what used to be Twitter, at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards.
And I'm Rhoda Metcalf. Thanks for listening.